Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Marie Chris and Pamela Wright. Marie and her mother, Pamela, are both children's advocates. They are authors with their own powerful book series. For Marie, it is The Citizen's Chronicle, and for Pamela, it is The Justifiable series. Marie, Pamela, and I will be discussing about their life's work in bringing awareness to child abuse and modern-day slavery. Although they are not able to be with us live this morning, I have a recorded interview for everyone to listen to. Please enjoy this wonderful interview with Marie and Pamela. Good morning, ladies. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you two doing this morning?
Good morning, Johnny. I am fine.
Wonderful. I would like to congratulate both of you for telling a compelling stories in both of your books about the world within our own world. It is an awesome read. Let us start by getting to know you two a little better. Marie, please describe your life growing up with your family.
My siblings and I, from the time we were very small, were taught by our parents that we are to always, always look out for not just ourselves and each other, but we should always fight for helping people who could not defend themselves. While we were going through school, we were taught that if you see the bullies picking on children who couldn't defend themselves, that we had better step up and we had better do something about it. And all growing up, my parents were constantly called by people in the church who knew that my parents were very giving people. And when they were coming across very difficult times in their own families, they would call my parents and ask them for help, whether it was a bill they'd gotten behind on or it was Christmas time and they couldn't provide Christmas for their children. And my parents were always this amazing example of going without for themselves just so that they could help other people. And they taught us that. And those were the lessons that we grew up with, and they have continued through my adult life, and I will never forget them.
That's wonderful. Pamela, as a mother, how did you share your views about life, about living with your children?
Well, I just knew that I wanted to raise children that thought about other people. I wanted my children to be happy, well-adjusted individuals. I was always extremely cautious. I'm also a very straightforward person. I spoke openly with my children about the dangers that are out there. And since there are dangers out there for my children, then there's dangers out there for other people's children. And I never wanted to be the parent that stuck their head in the sand and couldn't see beyond my own four walls. And so in rearing our children, we wanted them to be safe. We wanted them to be protected. And I think from time to time we may have been overly protective, but we know what's out there. And so I think the greatest gift that I could give my children is to care about somebody besides yourself. It's okay to care about yourself. It's okay to make things right for you, your family, and within your four walls. But there is an entire world out there, and people do need help.
What got you into being a children's advocate?
Well, about 13 years ago, I had a friend who was a foster parent, and she happened to be a foster parent for children that are considered, in the psychological terms, level 5, and that means a child who has so many emotional problems that if they are not helped in a way that allows them to live in society, that they would then have to go to a lockdown facility. Well, you can imagine how draining that's going to be on a foster parent. So she asked me to take courses, psychological courses, so that I could babysit from time to time to give her and her husband a break. And my husband and I did this. Well, before we even concluded those classes, we had already decided that we needed to be foster parents as well. And so we then became not only foster parents, but level five foster parents. And it has been an amazing 13 years into the psychology of children whom have been abused in every conceivable way.
That's a pretty challenging responsibility, isn't it?
It is. It is a very challenging responsibility, but it's also very rewarding. You know, there's been a lot of struggles, and sometimes you, from time to time, you have a child that maybe you're not the right mix for, but somebody is the right mix for that child. We, in all of these 13 years, I can say that we have had just amazing experiences with these children. We've learned as much from them as they have from us, and they have taught us how to be more loving, more caring, and I'm just so grateful for these past 13 years, and if I've been able to help in any way, then I'm so proud of that.
That's great. Marie, how did you react to all of this with your siblings having somebody else coming in, and obviously we're talking about that have some sort of a baggage, so to speak?
Because my parents raised us the way we did, this was not a shocking thing. It was just a matter of time for my parents to open up their home and start bringing in children that needed help. And I was proud of them. And a lot of times these children will want to talk about what has happened to them. They want to express their frustration, their loss of control. They want to talk about it, and they want to be told they did nothing wrong. They want to know that no matter what they went through, that they are still loved and that they are still innocent. And so a lot of experience came in for me over these past few years and having children open up to me because they viewed me as their big sister. Mm-hmm. And I learned so much, and it caused me to go to school for criminology, where I then learned the in-depth mind of a pedophile and the people who perpetrate on children. Mm-hmm. And it has then led me to wanting to be an advocate for children who can't defend themselves, who don't know how to protect themselves, and they don't have the ability to. And that's our responsibility as adults. And so that led me down this path.
What I've heard also, which is very interesting, is that you guys are about the same age or so. It makes it easier for them to communicate versus trusting an adult.
Right, right. Some of the children that come in, they're a lot smaller. When my mm-hmm. parents first started doing this, I was a lot younger, and mm-hmm. I think they just viewed me as not threatening.
Right.
A lot of children that come in from an abusive situation, they don't know who to trust. They are scared. They believe that maybe all adults are like what the adults were like that hurt them. But somebody who's a lot younger is just seems to be a safe option to talk to.
How interesting. What is the inspiration behind the Citizens Chronicles?
Well, my mother and I have had many conversations throughout the years of just ideas that we've had of what would the world be like if the justice system was different and it didn't fail the victims. What if the justice system was different and normal everyday citizens could see someone who was abusing and harming children and they could just take them out? And we've talked about how the world would be so different if the tables were turned on these pedophiles and human traffickers. And we knew that this was not something that we or any everyday citizen could do in the realm of what we were talking about. And we passed around some book ideas of maybe we should write a series that we could live vicariously through our characters and we could do the things that we wish that we could do. And one day I just felt like it was time to write one of the series. And I called up my mother and I said, is it okay if I take this particular idea and I run with it? And she said, absolutely, because I've been wanting to take this other idea that we talked about and I want to run with it. And so we each took which ones we wanted to go with, and I just sat down and started writing, and it just didn't stop. And it's now turned into, I've got 9 books outlined, and so book 2 will be coming out in January.
You're very passionate about your writing, and what is the single most important aspect in writing Citizen Out, which is the first of your book series?
What I wanted to do when writing Citizen Out was to really educate people in this country, in our society, about the mind of a pedophile. Why is it that they do what they do? Are they capable of stopping? What do they think about? How do they target particular children? And I wanted to put that in there as an educational tool for parents to be able to protect their own children and to be able to start doing whatever is necessary, whether it's changing up their routines, making sure their children are never left alone, how to teach their children about pedophiles and strangers, things that I don't think that the average citizen, the information that the average citizen doesn't normally have. And I wanted to do that. And I've heard from people who have read my book, they've come back and they've said that it was so insightful that now they are taking precautions they never would have thought of if they had not read my book.
Do you feel, on the other hand, that may cause a flip side effect to whereby people are living in paranoia instead?
I don't believe that people are going to be paranoid. I believe that they will be educated. And the only way to protect children and to protect ourselves against those that seek to do us harm is to know how their mind works, to know how to protect ourselves. Without that kind of information, we're left in the dark. And as far as paranoia, no, I don't think that that's going to happen. I believe that what could end up happening is that pedophiles and human traffickers could be really mad at me for this, for putting an insight into what they do, and I am happy to anger them at every chance I get.
Right. Well, I agree with you, because sometimes the lack of information causes problems because we're simply not aware. And most parents, if not all parents, or majority of parents in this case, are usually living their life in a crisis mode. So they're not paying attention to the present moment and basically paying attention to their surroundings as well as the surroundings for their children. So I agree with that. Pamela, what inspired you to write the Justifiable series?
Well, I've worked for over 13 years with abused and neglected children in the state of Kentucky. Over 100 children have come to our home in the past 13 years, some for just a night, some for a weekend, but many for weeks or months at a time. And of those 100 children, the percent of them being sexually abused was huge. They came into our home, and children often need to tell you their story, and it comes in so many different ways. I talk about this young boy that was in our house over 10 years ago, and he was due to be adopted. And how that works is the child is in the foster home, and they get weekend visits with the potential adopted parent or family. In this case, it was a single man. And this child would come back from these visits, and he would have letters with him that this man had written to him. And the law states that I'm not allowed to read mail for a child unless the child asks me to read that mail.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this child left the letters strewn out on the kitchen table, and I asked him to put them up before he went to school, and he didn't. The next day it was the same thing, and I knew that he wanted me to read them, but I had to make sure before I did so. And I said to him, if these are not picked up when you go to school, I'm going to read them. And, of course, they were not picked up. And when I read the letters, red flags were soaring for me, and I immediately took the letters to social services. And, of course, not only was the adoption stopped, but the man was prosecuted. Children will open up to you. You have to be there to listen and to pay attention. And I've seen that abuse literally destroy the person that child would have become. You know, sexual abuse sets a child up for lifelong psychological struggles that nobody should have to go through, especially a child. So that is what has inspired me to write the Justifiable series.
Interesting. One of the statistics that you shared at the very beginning of the book is over 800,000 people, children, women, and yes, even men, are taken and sold pretty much every year as sex slaves as well as work slaves. And I don't think people realize that huge of a number.
They do not.
And that's just in the U.S.
They can go just, you know, go online, get all of this information from a variety of sources, State Department facts, from various countries. It is rampant. And if anyone thinks it's not happening in the U.S., they are sadly mistaken, because it is.
Very interesting. Well, now, your first book is Justifiable Oregon. It's an interesting story because it's got this twist about modern-day drug cartel and so forth, those kind of things. Please tell us more about the story.
Well, Justifiable Oregon is a novel written about the lives of two people in the coastal area of Seaside and Cannon Beach, Oregon. Dan Morrison of Morrison Investigations, he reunites with Sarah Knight, a wealthy widow and photojournalist returning home after a very long and mysterious absence. They find themselves caught up in a web of intrigue that entangles them in the brutality of the Mexican drug and human trafficking cartel and a new enhancement drug that's infiltrating the world of pro sports. You know, I like to, I've written on my book, have you ever wished something bad would happen to someone evil because God and the law took too long? Well, there are those that risk it all for the rest of us. And Duplicity is the exquisite yacht manned by such men, men intent on luring the world's wealthiest human traffickers out of their millions and into their final moments on Earth inside Tillamook Rock's infamous lighthouse known as Terrible Tilly. That is book one. But book one also introduces two other elite teams that are set in place to take out human traffickers.
Do you believe in vigilante justice?
I believe in protecting children. I've seen the law protect pedophiles too often. I've seen the law firsthand allow pedophiles to either go free or to give them such a light sentence that it only says to them, be more careful the next time. I believe everyone must stand to protect our children. And if forced to choose between a pedophile or a child, I will choose to protect the child every single time.
I agree. Marie, how are you looking at, from your perspective in terms of Citizen Out, you have a different twist about being a children advocate yourself. You dedicate your book to Zara Claire Baker. Tell us a little bit about the story about Zara and how your take about the vigilante system.
Zara Baker had gone missing here in the U.S. She was originally from Australia. Her father brought her over when he met a woman online. He married that woman and brought Zara with him. Zara's biological mother is still in Australia. And this stepmother of Zara murdered her and then reported her missing. And while I was wrapping up the book trailer for Citizen Out is when the reports of Zara's dismembered body being found. And the director of the book trailer and I and my entire family were glued to the television and heartbroken. I mean, this story hit home to us so hard because we were trying to get out awareness, and then all of this was coming out just as we were wrapping up the trailer. And it was so personal to me because it was everything I was fighting, you know, against in our society. And I just looked at this little girl who had survived cancer twice, lost her leg, lost her hearing to cancer, and then her stepmother brutally murders her and dismembers her. And I just was in absolute anger and frustration. And I knew that all too many times when children go missing, and even if they are found murdered, their story seems to disappear from everybody's thoughts, everybody's mind, their news, way too quick. And I wanted this story of Zara to be out there, and I wanted everyone who ever bought my book to look at her face on the back cover and remember her and know this is what we're fighting. You know, we are fighting the people who are destroying the innocence in our society. And I since then have become in contact with Zara's mother, her biological mother, and we have communicated. And I've gotten really close to her, and also with Christy Pope, who started the Zara Project on Facebook. And we're all uniting, and we want her story to be remembered. But it's not just her. And so I've decided that every book that comes in this series is going to have another child's picture on it. So all of the books will have a dedication to a child that something so tragic has happened to, so that people don't easily forget. We don't have that luxury. We've got a war that has been waged on our children, and we cannot forget them.
How much has your education and your first-hand experience helped you in writing the book?
A lot. I mean, to be able to write the details that I did from the pedophile's point of his vision and when looking for his target, that a way I did in the preface of Citizen Out, I would never have been able to do that if I had not been watching tape after tape of interviews of pedophiles that were in prison talking about how they chose their victims, what they thought when they were looking for their next victim. And all of that is what I used in this book series so that people will know. And so the education was very crucial to being able to get inside of a pedophile's mind.
Well, what you're saying is that they have a game plan and the parents don't.
That's true. It is absolutely true. And they look for things like right now with school coming back, we're all depending so much on our routines, on everything being on a schedule. Well, that's exactly what the pedophiles will learn, your schedules. What are the few moments your child's going to be alone? What are the times when you're absolutely the most chaotic in your day that you're not going to notice your child gone for 20, 30 minutes? When do you let your kid outside to play? Are they car riders? Do they wait at the bus stop? Do they walk home from the bus stop alone? Do, you know, things like that. And there's just so many things that we can do to protect our children and keep a predator from infiltrating our families. And that's what I'm trying to do, is get the word out.
Very interesting. Now, you also created this group. Of course, this group, to me, I feel like it does exist. And I'm saying this lightly because it's a sort of a situation here, like, do we really want a group out there? And then again, as a parent, you do want to have a group out there. So let's talk a little bit about the Vigilante Destas, this shadowy group that goes out there that actually are stalking the stalkers themselves and protecting the children.
They do. Mm-hmm. Well, in the book, this group is very well funded. They call themselves the Citizens, and they work for a company called ARC that is a securities and technology company. They have all the resources they need to watch a pedophile, to have surveillance on them all the time, and to make sure that they are not gearing up to take another child. Now, if the pedophile never goes after another child, guess what? Nothing's going to happen to the pedophile. But when the pedophile starts showing signs that they are lurking in the shadows, they are gearing up by doing preparations for taking a child, then the Citizens will do what is necessary to take out that pedophile and make sure that child not only is not harmed, but never knows that there was even a danger. Because they believe that keeping the child, you know, completely innocent is their utmost responsibility. And they will recruit, the Citizens will recruit, but they have to do so very carefully. You couldn't just go out and advertise that you're looking for more members to come in and help you wipe out pedophiles.
Right.
So they have to do this very carefully, and they also have to make sure that there's always protocols set in place and that they're very highly trained so that they do not get caught. Because if they do, then all the innocent lives that they could save in the future, it just wouldn't happen. So they are very careful, and they constantly are watching each other's back, and it helps that they've got the funding that they have.
Do you feel the court system in real world right now that's happening in the United States fairly liberal when it comes to crimes of this nature?
I believe that our justice system is so incredibly lax on criminals, especially pedophiles, people who murder children, human traffickers. I believe that our justice system is always so worried about the rights of criminals that they forget that they are there for the rights and protection of innocent members of this society. And nobody is more innocent in our society than children. So why are they not doing everything necessary to protect the children? There are so many things that our justice system could do. And I do have to wonder why on earth they aren't doing these things. It does make me wonder who's protecting whose own best interest here. And it does make you wonder about the depth of corruption in our justice system because they are failing our children every day.
Pamela, how has your experiences helped you in writing your book?
Well, for the past 13 years, I've studied child psychology, and I've worked with child therapists as well as psychologists in the recovery of these children, these children who've been abused in every conceivable way. And I work daily with the children in my home, helping them to restore self-esteem, which is probably why my books have a psychological twist associated with emotional trauma. Also, my work with all of these children, it has brought me a level of compassion and empathy that I didn't possess before I began working with these children. All of the things that they go through really does put into perspective the trials that we ourselves face. I think that their trials has helped me to categorize mine and think outside of the box and not be so self-absorbed. And I just think that that has helped me in writing this series.
In your experiences, have you seen positive things that came out from the events that have occurred? And you see the plus side in terms of the children are able to overcome the things that they have encountered.
Let me share one example. The very first teenage child that ever entered our home, we have a house where most of these children all have a private bedroom. I do that for security and safety reasons for them. And this one teenage girl, the very first child that we ever had, she asked me if she could rearrange the bedroom furniture, and I said, okay, why do you want to do that? And she said, because all of my mom's boyfriends like to come in my room at night, and I need to be able to watch the door because I'm afraid. And I said, you can not only change the furniture, I will help you. We rearranged furniture until she was completely satisfied. This is a young girl that was terrified to close her eyes and terrified to go to sleep at night. We also put a lock on her bedroom door on the inside so that when she went to sleep, she could lock her door and feel safe and secure. Well, I am happy to tell you that she was only supposed to be in our home for a couple of nights. She stayed with us until she aged out at the age of 18. My husband walked her down the aisle to her husband. She got a nursing degree. She had three children, and we were there for their births. She still calls us mom and dad, and I am here to tell you that these children are not throwaway children. These children have every opportunity in the world to succeed and excel. And I also need to tell you that even though they can succeed and excel and have a happy life, because of the sexual abuse, they will never be the person that God intended them to be had that abuse never occurred. And so even though my mission on earth is to help these children to recover everybody's mission should be to see that the abuse doesn't happen in the first place. And what we're trying to do with our book series, the series that has crossover characters in book two, is mm-hmm. to inspire people to be the voice for children.
Very interesting. I like the idea about the fact that you guys are providing unconditional love that have changed the course in her life.
Yes.
That
yes.
makes a big difference for her and, of course, for everybody else, too.
All of these children assume that in some way it's their fault.
Right.
That is a child's mind. No matter what happens, it doesn't matter if the parent, it's an a parent that abuses them or a neighbor or a stranger, they all assume it's their fault. And it is our job to make them understand, and it takes a very long time for them to understand, that it is not their fault, that they had no complicity in this. And their self-esteem, you know, we as human beings can destroy each other's self-esteem in a moment, but it takes years to recover, and that is my job.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Marie, what are some of the things parents should be able to be looking out for to keep their children safe from predators?
Every parent needs to watch their neighborhood. You need to be involved. You need to be aware of your surroundings. You need to look for anybody that is focusing on your child, making excuses to be around your child, finding every opportunity, or how about a car that doesn't belong in your neighborhood is driving around there or parked. You need to also know where your child is at all times. Who are they with? Who are their friends? And if they say they're going to be somewhere, check up and make sure they are. You have to be a parent first and a friend second. Another thing to do is make time every day to have conversations with your child. Listen to what they are saying. Don't be afraid to check up on them and to ask questions. And if they do have access to the internet, you have got to get on their Facebook page. You have got to see who's contacting them. There is a lot of predators that will pose as children just to friend other kids on the internet just so that they can lure them away. Mm-hmm. And this happens all day long. So you have to check up on your children. Privacy is not a luxury in this day and age. Your children cannot be afforded that. Another thing is change your routine frequently. Pedophiles are watching and waiting for those few moments when they know your child is usually alone. They know that parents are busy and that these routines are how we all keep it together. You also need to subscribe to a website that alerts you when a predator moves into your area. I personally use Family Watchdog. It will give me email alerts whenever someone has moved in or out that is a registered sex offender. Those are very, very important.
That's familywatchdog.com or .org?
I believe it's .org.
Okay.
Watchdog.
Okay.
WATCHDOG. Yeah, Watchdog. They are very good at this.
What can people do to help to raise the awareness about children being the target as well?
I believe that in today we've got social media, which we've all seen more things come across social media, and it comes so much faster than it ever does the news anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be following a lot of these organizations that are getting the word out, getting the awareness out, and we need to retweet them. Anytime that we see that there is a child that is on an Amber Alert, we need to all be tweeting that, getting on Facebook, putting it on our walls. We all need to do that. The minute that we hear that a child has been taken or there was an attempted abduction, mm-hmm. we need to be doing that. If you find that there is a predator living in your area, maybe the people you know isn't subscribing to the websites like Family Watchdog, put it on your Facebook wall. If all of a sudden pedophiles got on the internet and they're seeing that the Facebook walls are like crazy talking about a child that's just been taken, or their alert is up there saying they've just moved to a new area or a new neighborhood, this would freak them out. This would cause the pedophiles to start slowing down so that we can start protecting our kids. We want to shine a light on them, and that's why we all need to come together. We need to band together and unite and show a united force. And the best way to do that is with social media, also events in your communities that are putting on the Identikid kits where you can take your kids down, get them fingerprinted, their picture taken, all of their information put on a card. We need to be supporting those events. We also need to be supporting any event in our neighborhoods that are teaching any awareness to how to keep your kids safe. These organizations are usually nonprofit, and they're doing this out of the goodness of their heart. We need to support them because it is in our best interest.
That's very true. Where can someone go to buy your book and get more information about you?
They can go to mariechrist.com, and I have got my book on barnesandnoble.com, on Amazon. It's on my website. They can send me emails through my website for more information. If they're looking for something that's going on in their neighborhood or their area, I would love to get that information to them as well.
Wonderful. And how about you, Pamela? Where can someone go to buy your book and get more information about you?
Well, also AmazonBooks.com and also PamelaWrightBooks.com. Also, I have my website that they can go to track our upcoming events, see past reviews, as well as interviews.
Wonderful. How has writing the Justifiable series impacted you personally?
Well, you know, it has millions of children and women and men, as we've spoken before, they're taken each and every year and forced into slavery around the globe. And like we discussed, the U.S. is no different. Mm-hmm. And those taken and forced into the sex trade, they rarely escape unless it's through death. This is as current as today's news. And my Justifiable series has made me more determined to bring attention to the very real and dangerous world of human trafficking that's all around us. And this book series has made me more committed to saving children and those taken against their will. It's been a real eye-opener because even though the series is fiction, I certainly had to do a lot of research to get my facts straight, and the facts blew me away. I had no idea, and I presume a lot of Americans have no idea that the human trafficking trade is very real, very rampant right here in the United States.
How would you like to see the system change in terms of addressing this issue? You're very right about that this is happening all the time, and, of course, there's no spotlight on it.
There is no spotlight on it. I'm not sure why that is. I would like to have a concrete answer as to why there hasn't been a spotlight on this ever-increasing problem. But I think that talk shows like yours, which are wonderful, will bring attention and light to this horrible travesty that's perpetrated not just on our children, but on women especially, but also on men. You know, men, people often don't think of men being trafficked right along with women and children, but they are. They're used as slaves and indentured servants. And, you know, when all of that is, all of their worth is used up, they're often simply gotten rid of. And until light is shown on this, I don't really see it improving. I don't see the traffickers being concerned. I don't see them being concerned that their trafficking operations will be stopped or halted. I think that it is everybody's job, everybody's concern to shed light on this horrible epidemic.
What kind of reviews have you received from your book?
Well, I'm happy to say that I have been getting some pretty good reviews. I'm very excited by that.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you very much. It just sort of incites me to complete book two, which I expect to be out in very early spring of 2012. And then I've already began book three although I am still currently working on book two. So, you know, it's just inspired me to go forth with all of this.
How has writing The Citizens Chronicle impacted you, Marie?
Well, I've learned so much in all of my research for this book, and it has impacted me in the way that I am so much more dedicated than I've ever been to getting the word out, but also partnering up with organizations like Traffic 911 and The Ultimate Evil, Perverted Justice. I want to have partnerships with them, which we're working on, so that we can band together, because one thing I've noticed is there are so many smaller groups across this country. They're all fighting for the same thing, and that's the safety of children. But I think that we need to take it to a whole new level. And if we band together, which I'm working on, then we can have a much stronger impact on this. And so it has been for me such a juggling act, because I am a mother of three, and my family and my husband that I take care of, plus writing this book, plus marketing, plus developing these partnerships. I have definitely had to learn to be a lot more organized and trying to make sure that I get everything done that I need to. And I have definitely lost a lot of sleep over the statistics and over these stories that keep coming to me from people wanting me to know what has happened to their children and things like that. And so it's just, it's been life-changing, to tell you the truth.
What I feel, too, is like people need to get angry. The overall citizen of the United States need to say, you know, enough is enough. Let us all band together. Unfortunately, if it's not my child, it's not someone that I know, oh, who cares? Uh-huh, I hear about it, but it really doesn't do anything.
Yes, I think you're right in that aspect.
Yeah. People need to understand that it may be somebody else's child right now, but next month it could be yours or it could be mine. And everybody's children, they're our children in this society. They are our future. And we have to get angry, but our anger needs to turn to action. Mm-hmm. And we all need to understand that, yes, it is a big job ahead of us. And it is not something that one person can do, but it is definitely something that a few hundred thousand of us banding together can do. Mm-hmm. And we all come like a unified force towards this problem. We are going to shake up this country. We are going to have pedophiles and human traffickers running. We're going to have them scared. And we're going to be able to make the change that is necessary for the well-being of our children. It is necessary.
Any thoughts about collaborating with your mom in terms of crossover books, character-wise and so forth?
Oh, I love it. I mean, there were times when I was writing Citizen Out that I would get stuck on something. And, of course, I got my talent from my mother, who's an amazing writer, and I would call her up and I would read her where I was stuck at and I would ask her for help. And she was just right there with all these ideas that got my creative flow going. And with book two, we've been working and collaborating on it, and we have pitched some ideas of different ways that we can bring our characters together on certain missions. Mm-hmm. And it just is such an inspiration, because every time I talk to her about it, she's got all these great ideas, which fuels more ideas for me. And it's, I wouldn't want to write a book without her. That's the honest truth.
Fascinating. When did you discover you have the ability to write?
When I was a preteen, I was dabbling at writing poetry and things like that, and I was a very dramatic kid. I really was. And I was always writing in my notebooks about my feelings and who I was mad at and things like that, and just the injustices in my life, and which wasn't anything, you know, I realized later in life. But writing has always been a part of who I am. My mother has written for years, and I've read what she's done. And as I got older and had kids and saw what my kids were facing in the ways of danger and stuff, I decided that I wanted to put that ability that I had and that talent to actually creating a change in this world. I didn't want it to just be for me. I wanted to impact people. I wanted to lead people into a mission that was worthwhile. And so I'm just so grateful that I got that talent from my mother.
Very interesting. Pamela, How about you? When did you get your desire to start writing? And I know that you write a lot. Did
well,
it start when you were a child?
Well, yes, it did. And it, I remember my parents telling me that I had a severely wild imagination. And so I love to think about possibilities of characters and plots and intrigue. Mm-hmm. And I often run scenes through in my mind and will jot them down wherever I can and try to use them here and there. And so, yes, I've always had a massive interest in writing.
Very interesting. One of the things also in reading the books, it does give one the sort of empowerment, like you had mentioned in the very beginning. If this is me, this is what I am going to do.
Yes.
And that feels good because then you are taking action.
Well, you know, if for me, writing the Justifiable series has given me an outlet for the frustration that I feel for.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just time-consuming with these children in need. It is very difficult sometimes to hear the trauma and abuse that they've gone through. But you do have to hear it. You do have to deal with it, and you do have to help them with it. So writing the Justifiable series has been an outlet for me.
Mm-hmm.
I am able to get I'm able to get some justice for these kids through my fictional writing.
By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you ladies have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning? And either one of you can start with this.
Go ahead, Mom.
All right, I will. My recipe for living is called Make a Difference in Someone's Life. I think that you need 100% of caring for others. We get caught up in our own lives, our own drama, and it's easy to become self-absorbed. We must never get so busy that we forget that there are others out there that need our help and our caring and our understanding. I also think that we need massive amounts of doing. And it's easy to just do something, anything. If you see something out of the ordinary that doesn't look right, pick up the phone and make a call. It's easy to do something, little bits here and there. Put yourself out there for those that can't help themselves. I also think that we need a heaping cup of get out of your own comfort zone. All of us like to stay in our own comfort zone. We become complacent and we fail to look beyond our own four walls at the needs of others. I think if you take all of this and you shake it, not stir it, until it's well blended into a way of life that cares about and helps children and others in need, we need to bake it with a very high degree of heat and passion and integrity and determination. And then we need to serve it daily and watch the world change for the better, one child at a time.
Can your mom write or what? I mean, that's fantastic,
I know.
Isn't it?
You can see you can see that I, no matter how much I write, no matter how well I might write, it's nothing in comparison to her. So
that's fantastic. I mean, it makes me feel hungry and inspired.
Well, my recipe for life is not going to be as eloquent as hers, but mine is get involved. You have to look through your life and understand that it's not just about you. And no matter how big the ingredient list may seem, or how much it's going to take to prepare what it is you're trying to do in life, you have to start with the first ingredient, and that is open your eyes and look at what you've got and take a look at what is needed in the world. Offer yourself up to helping other people and get involved. Right now, there are too many people out there that are begging for assistance, that are begging for help, and it could be a phone call they need each week just to be checked in on, or it could be that you hear the screams for help. Do not shut your window or close your door. You do need to call the police. You do need to get involved. It's not just about protecting yourself. It's about protecting our streets, our children, our lives. because right now it could be your neighbor or it could be a stranger a mile down the road that you don't even know, but next time it could be you. And we're all in this together, and we're all going to come together at some point. And we need to look out for one another. We need to put ourselves on the line, and we need to live every single day making sure that what we've done that day matters in the life of someone else. And that's my recipe for life.
That's fantastic. It just tells me that there are a whole lot of us that just sits on the sideline as spectators, you know, and that's bad because we like to be that Monday morning quarterback, and you could have done this, you could have done that, but in the end, you don't do anything.
That's true. And, you know, this whole entire thing, I remember a story when I was studying criminology that happened in New York about a woman who was screaming for help while she was being attacked. She was being stabbed. And 38 people heard her screaming for 45 minutes, and not one person called the police. She ended up dying. And when the police showed up, they asked the people, well, did you hear her screaming? They said, yes, but I did not want to get involved. Well, that's just horrible. And I personally hold those people just as accountable for her death as the man who attacked her. And I think that we need to change the way our society goes. We all need to get involved. These are our streets, and we need to take them back.
It's a form of detachment. And the interesting part about it, like you have just mentioned, what if it's you?
Yes.
Would you just like to say, oh, yeah, I heard you.
Yes.
But I just don't want to get involved.
Yes.
Because it could be our children. If
That's
someone
right.
heard our child screaming for help, wouldn't you want them to call the police? Or
would you
involved?
Want them to tell you that, I know, yeah, I heard it, but, hey, I don't want to get involved.
Exactly.
And,
you know,
we never want to be that person. We never, and I never wanted my children to be that person that can look away from someone in need. We all have to be the person that steps up to the plate.
Very true. Well, ladies, thank you for the great recipes for living. I'm really hungry now, and I'm inspired as well.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
I enjoyed having both of you on. Thank you for spending this hour with me. And I wish both of you much success with your book series.
Thank you so much. It's been lots of fun.
Thank you. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. I hope you have enjoyed the recorded interview with Marie and Pamela. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Ty Yanile. He is the author of Life is Not a Candy Store. It's the Way to the Candy Store. This is a wonderful book about a spiritual guide to the road of life for teens. Ty and I will be discussing about his life's journey and his pursuit to help today's teenagers find enlightenment. For additional information about this show, future shows, and to receive a free recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening, and have a great week.